So have we've got some people here for the first time? Yeah. Kundalata? Yeah. Anyone else? You're here? You were here last week? Yep. Okay, everyone was here. And some come in a little later because they have to work. Well, let's have a little overview. Oh, we're done. We have looked at the different parts of Krishna's body in relationship to the Srimad Bhagavatam. Just very briefly, of course, we haven't discussed these at length, we've just really, you know, listed the items. We haven't gone over this thoroughly, so don't think you've missed anything. We've looked at the 10 subjects of Srimad Bhagavatam, starting from creation all the way down to the Samabhanam. Very brief summary of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Just a sentence on a breakup of the cantos. That's what we're coming to. Okay. Today, we're going to discuss, just to give you a brief rundown. We're going to have a little overview of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Again, just very briefly. We're going to cover with a little bit more detail the beginning of the second chapter. And of course, an overview of the whole second chapter. And we're going to have a look at an overview of the third chapter and just some of the important parts of the second and third chapters, which we haven't looked at, and actually even some of the first chapter. So the first three chapters we're going to cover sections of those today, following different themes. Towards the in the second half of our lesson, we're going to do a group, split you up into three different groups, and you'll do group presentations. One group will look at a certain set of verses and refute demigod worship. Another group will look at other verses and they will describe the various avatars. And another group will look at text 28 from the third chapter and describe why we call Krishna Swayam Bhagavan. So, alright. Now, to begin, the first six chapters of the Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, there is a prelude to the Srimad Bhagavatam in the first three verses. The first six chapters, there is a meeting by the sages of Naimisharanya. And they got together for just after the onset of Kali Yuga, after the departure of Lord Krishna, and they were going to have a 1,000-year yajna in order to, for the welfare of the people who live in Kali Yuga. sorry I'm late this morning. I've been having a Saturday morning jogger. I'm about 8 o'clock this morning. I just finished. And I've been racing through to try and, you know, I was still late, but I've been going very, very quickly. Anyway, these, sages of Naimisharanya, they address Suta Goswami, who was chosen to address all the sages, and they glorified Suta Goswami, and in glorifying Suta Goswami, we get a glimpse into an understanding of what are the qualifications of one who is able to represent Srila Vyasadeva. Suta Goswami begins to speak, and really within the second and third chapter, Suta Goswami is answering questions, six principal questions that were asked by the sages of Naimisharanya. Those questions, of course, are covered right throughout the Bhagavatam, such as descriptions of the, you know, how the Lord deals with the, in relationship with the material creation, you know, description of the various avatars and what have you. So it goes on through, you know, but there are specific verses, and especially within the second and third chapter, those questions have been answered. then, from chapters 4 to 6, the sages ask, have some further inquiries, and they want to know how Suta Goswami came to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam from Parikshit Maharaj. And he begins to narrate how Narada Muni instructed Srila Vyasadeva, who spoke to Sukadeva Goswami, and Suta Goswami heard that narration. And then, you know, the rest of the chapters, right up to chapter 19, where Sukadeva Goswami, you know, gradually makes his appearance, are other topics which sort of on the way to Sukadeva Goswami's appearance were related, such as, well, who can name a few? What have we got? Prayers of Queen Kunti, prayers of Bhishma, Ashwatthama, punished, Krishna, living with the queens, preparing to leave, is it Dwarka? Was that? He saved Parikshit Maharaj, yeah. So, you know, there are various chapters which Suta Goswami relates, you know, on the way, which is very important incidental occurrences leading up to the appearance of Sukadeva Goswami. And then we have Sukadeva Goswami appears, and then, you know, the Bhagavatam begins with Suta Goswami, Sukadeva Goswami's, you know, recitation. Any questions or comments? It's a very brief summary. Alright. There's a few doozy questions in amongst there, but I'm not going to mention them. I'm going to, since you didn't bring them up, I'm going to keep going. Now, so really, you know, after, you know, it's sort of setting the scene after the Battle of Kurukshetra. And then the Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear the recitation from Sukadeva Goswami. So then let's now go back to some of those different subjects, and we'll just recap on some of those parts which we've discussed in detail and other important sections we'll cover today. We looked at the qualities of the representative of Vyasadeva, chapter 1, verses 5 to 7, and we covered some of these items here. We looked at verses 10 again, same chapter, and we looked at the state of affairs in the age of Kali, and we made a bit of a list. Can you see that? If anyone has difficulty seeing, you can come into the middle. I like the seats. Who did that? It's good. Nicely done. Oh, it's probably Narayani. Is that set up for Narayani, is it? Okay.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. What's that? It's good, isn't it? Yeah. Do you miss not having a table in front of you? Some? Yeah. Okay. The six questions for the sages of Naimisharanya. We covered those. And now we're coming to the first and second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, in the first chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, as we described, we have the prelude, where in verse number 1, the subject of the Srimad Bhagavatam is described. Maybe I'll cover that up. I'll stand here. Don't look at that yet. Look at me. In the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, you're still looking that way. I'll cover it up. Stop looking. Am I covering? I'll come back. That's good. Srila Vyasadeva offers obeisances to who? Lord Sri Krishna, also known as Vasudeva. Yeah. And he describes that Lord Sri Krishna Vasudeva is the absolute truth. He offers his obeisances. So therefore, we from the very beginning, we have the subject of Srimad Bhagavatam and the goal of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then in the next couple of verses, it is described the glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam as being the topmost literature. By the study of the Srimad Bhagavatam, one can actually attain the goal of Lord Sri Krishna, the Absolute Truth. So that's the prelude. So three things there. What were they? Subject, goal, the Bhagavatam. Glorifying the Bhagavatam, yes. There's a few aspects of that which we will actually... the third verse, we discuss a little bit more in the next class, or the fifth class, which will be next week. We're going to come back to that a little bit, how it's the ripened fruit of the Vedic literatures. What's that?
Yep.
Oh, we'll discuss that. but it'll be in the next... class, the next Saturday we have a class, and some of the aspects of the second verse we discuss today. Yes?
In the
We'll discuss that. All right, now the second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the beginning, Sri Goswami offers his respects to Sukadeva Goswami in verses 2 and 3. We can come back to our chart now. Vyasuvaksha, text number one. So who is speaking Bhagavatam? Yeah, all at once.
Sudha Goswami is speaking at the stage of Nandasuranya. And he's repeating what he heard from Sukadeva Goswami, who's repeating what he heard from his father, Vyas.
Yep. So when Sukadeva Goswami begins to speak, really in the, second canto, does he speak? What does he do with the first 19 chapters that were spoken by Sri Goswami after him?
It's Sri Goswami speaking.
He speaks after Sukha.
Yeah, from the second canto or something.
He speaks from the second canto. Yeah, so what does he do with the first 19 chapters spoken by Sri Goswami and the sages? Any comments? These are some of the questions I thought you might. Sri Goswami, when Sukadeva Goswami speaks, does he say that in the future Sudha Goswami will offer respects to me? Yes, he does. They're actually all speaking. The Srimad Bhagavatam is 18,000 verses. So that's what we're saying here. Here we see that Sudha Goswami is offering respects to Sukadeva Goswami in verse number 2. That's why we put Vyasavacha. Vyasadev is speaking this. All 18,000 verses. And what he, those 18,000 verses, is what Sukadeva Goswami spoke. And what he spoke, Sudha Goswami spoke. One of the last verses, yes, one of the last verses of the, in the, I think in the 12th canto, Sukadeva Goswami says to Parikit Maharaj that in the future Sudha Goswami will speak this subject matter to the sages of Naimisharanya. So Sukadeva Goswami is, when he's after speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Sudha Goswami, of course, was present, and he is saying that in the future he will also recite this. And what he is reciting is, the complete Bhagavatam. 12th canto.
Yeah.
I've got it here. I can tell you the exact verse. Sukadeva Goswami said, long ago this essential anthology of all the Puranas was spoken by the infallible Lord Narayana Rishi to Narad. That's another topic. Who then repeated it to Krishna Dwapayan Vyas. So Srimad Bhagavatam does come down in a couple of disciplic successions. But we generally go from Brahma to Narad. My dear Parikit, that great personality of Srila Vyasadeva taught me this same scripture. Srimad Bhagavatam, which is equal in stature to the four Vedas, the best of the Kurus, the same Suta Goswami who is sitting before us, will speak this Bhagavatam to the sages assembled at the great sacrifice at Naimisharanya. This he will do when questioned by the members of the assembly headed by Sanaka, which was, you know, a few hundred years later. We know, Hare Krishna, we know also that, we're looking at the incarnations in the third chapter, and of course they describe the advent of Lord Buddha, who come after Vyas, compiles from a Bhagavatam, Kalki comes after. So many events which come later are described there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Suta Goswami offers his respects to Sukadeva Goswami, to Srila Vyasadeva, Naranarayana Rishi, who has a very strong connection with Srimad Bhagavatam. As we said, he also instructed Narada Muni, amongst others. We know also, you know, from the Srimad Bhagavatam, just incidentally, that when Krishna was leaving the planet, he empowered the Srimad Bhagavatam and spoke it to Uddhava. And then Uddhava went to Bhadarika Ashram for the benefit of personalities like Naranarayana Rishi and the sages there, and he described the confidential aspects of Srimad Bhagavatam to those. You know. So, you know, there's our disciple succession of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam also has some concise forms, but then it has its complete form with 18,000 verses, 12 cantos, 335 chapters, which is what that is what these three have spoken. Suta Goswami glorifies the sages' questions. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna. Krishna Samprasna. And then Yenatma Suprasidati. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. Bhavad Bhir Lokamangalam. And so are of relevance to the world's welfare. Verses 6 to 11 describe pure devotion to Krishna as the supreme dharma. We'll look at that a little in more detail. And to further substantiate Suta Goswami's answer to questions 1 and 2, which he gave here in verse 6 and 7 in the second chapter, he speaks, you know, verses 8 to 11 in the second chapter as well. So they really substantiate his answer here. Verses 12 to 22, hearing, you know, the process of achieving perfection in Krishna consciousness. We'll look at that again next time we meet. Verses 23 to 29, we do discuss a little bit today, that Vasudeva is the supreme goal of life, and verses 30 to 34 describe the Purusha avatars, creating and maintaining the material world. So you can have a look at this later on. I'll leave it there if anyone wants to take notes. So that's a summary there of the second chapter, and some of these verses from 6 to 11 we're going to cover, and 23 to 34 we'll cover today. Beginning with a look at verses 6 to 11, pure devotion to Krishna, the Supreme Dharma. So, I've written the Sanskrit here. You've all got Srimad Bhagavatam, of course. Sarvai pumsam paradhomo dharmo. Now, there's a word-for-word translation there, but from the translation, the supreme occupation dharma for all humanity. Yato bhaktir adhoksha jay. That by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Ahoitaki apatiyata. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. Yayatma suprasidati. These verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the second chapter, you know, Srila Prabhupada gave well over 80 or 70 lectures on these actual verses, and then there are many other lectures where he's speaking on other verses and yet really discusses these verses from the second chapter. There are many, many, many lectures and discussions, and it comes up so often in Srila Prabhupada's preaching. They're very, very important verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And especially with these ones, these first couple, it is good to be able to break them down like this and just quote, you know, ahoitaki apatiyata, you know, that such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted. It's good to be a Srila Prabhupada, especially these ones. It's good to, you can use just even little chunks of the verse. You know, they're so important that even little chunks of them have such a universal application. So I'm just going to keep going unless anyone stops me for any. Verse number 7 of the second chapter. So, in that first verse, of course, Sudha Goswami has described his answer to the sage's question. What was the sage's question? The first two questions. Yeah, what is the ultimate good for all humanity and what is the essence of all scripture? So he's answering that. The essence of all, you know, the ultimate good and the essence of all scripture, of course, is to, you know, render devotional service unto, where's you're looking at the questions? Yeah, do you want to read that out? What's it say?
Question 1, what is the absolute and ultimate good for people in general?
Yes.
Sutta Goswami explains that the ultimate benefit for people in general is to develop love of God through devotional service to Sri Krishna or his plenary part.
Does he give a verse reference?
Verse 1.2.6, you said.
Yep.
Question 2, what is the essence of all scriptures? Throughout the second chapter of Bhagavatam, and especially in 1.2.6-7 and continuing on to text 28, Sri Krishna is confirmed as the only object of worship, and establishing one's lost relationship with him is proclaimed as the essence of the Vedic scriptures.
Yes. So, you know, verses 6 and 7 answer those two questions. The first 6, describing the essence and of all scripture and the ultimate good, devotional service to Lord Sri Krishna. Here, describing that, you know, that activity is not dependent on any material qualification. And therefore, we have Vasudev Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, Yeah. Here, the Mayapur Institute, they break it up a little differently to what it's in the... they've got this part here, which is actually the middle. Ashuvaragyam jnanam cha. Very soon, detachment and knowledge. So one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. And these words are on either side of them. Janiyati does produce, and yadahoitakum, that which is causeless. So we can conclude, so we can understand that knowledge and detachment and all other good qualities develop by the grace of the Lord to one who is engaged in bhakti yoga, and that therefore one who is engaged in bhakti yoga has all good qualifications, whereas those who may be engaged in the cultivation of knowledge and detachment may not necessarily have any bhakti. So one who has bhakti has everything, but it's not the other way around. Yes. Srila Prabhupada, one immediately acquires. Very soon. Immediately. It's very, very soon. Very, very soon. Because it happens by the grace of the Lord, and therefore we see it's quite often being discussed that sometimes people come to Krishna consciousness, they take up bhakti yoga, and the Lord very kindly gives them a big taste, you know, of Krishna consciousness far beyond what they're qualified to have, just to give them a push on the path. And therefore sometimes you see people will come along addicted to all sorts of nonsense. They have some prasadam, they'll chant Hare Krishna, all of a sudden they want to give up all, you know, they'll stop smoking, they'll stop drinking, they'll stop eating meat, within straight away. Certainly then, of course, Krishna will make them mature as devotees, not that they should expect it, without any, surrender to Krishna, that always they're going to get to, massive amounts of advancement.
But it takes distinct from knowledge.
Knowledge and detachment are practically concomitant factors. Well, if there's knowledge of, spiritual subject matters, then that produces a taste by which one can become detached. That's what they're tasting. For instance, if someone comes to Krishna consciousness and they find it very, very difficult to be detached from, sense gratification in the material world, and then they chant, they have prasad and associated devotees, and then they find somehow or another, I am, easily detached from things. There's a relish in that, detachment. And then also, their understanding that, I'm not this body, I am spirit soul, that knowledge has a certain relish, taste, because it, it means knowing that you're eternal, you have a relationship with the Supreme. It takes away the fear factor, the anxiety, so there's a relish. There's something, that type of enjoying life like that is something you can relish and taste. No, there's no time frame. There's no set time that as we mark the passage of time. It can be a fraction of a second.
Can it happen?
See, very soon means that the candidates maybe you know, they may have some little qualification, some from a previous life. Maybe there may have been some association with Bhakti Yoga previously, which means that they can be considered like dry grass. So if you put a spark in dry grass, it will ignite very quickly, very soon. Asu, if that grass is wet, that means that a person is more, you know, addicted by nature, you know, more deeply covered by the modes of nature, and a little bit more determined to, you know, enjoy sense gratification, then asu very soon is quickly, but not as quick. So, you know, it leaves it a little bit, covers all bases, but still you have to consider that it takes the living entity millions and millions of lifetimes, and still they do not get anywhere near bhakti, and then yet Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojananta, applying Bhakti Yoga millions of years is reduced to, you know, a few years, a couple of lifetimes. That's still very soon. Right? So very soon is very good. Alright, is that okay? We'll move on. You satisfied?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to flip over here. Okay. As we described, that these verses from 8 to 11 really further substantiate his answers there. 8 and 9. Now, of course, you're all familiar with the verses. You've been studying them like anything at home. So I'm just paraphrasing the essence of them. Dharma is useless if it doesn't bring one to Krishna bhakti. And within that, there is a little discussion within the purport of the three levels of occupational duties: concentrated selfishness, extended selfishness, and mental speculation. Mental speculation is a little subtle, but these are all occupational duties will you know, fit into those three different categories. And he is saying that that dharma, those occupational duties, are useless if they don't bring one to Krishna bhakti. That all occupational engagements are actually meant for ultimate liberation. So he's stating this as the essence of all, you know, of the Vedas. This is what the Vedas tell us. This is what the Acharyas tell us. So he's summing it up. And the purpose of life in verse 10 of the second chapter, he's saying the purpose of life is inquiry into the absolute truth, not sense gratification. So here, so far we have this little chart. We get some material gain. What's its purpose? Self-preservation. And self-preservation allows us to inquire about the absolute. So he's pointing out this is the path of Dharma. Not that we leave out inquiry about the absolute truth and we replace it with sense gratification. So people think Dharma means you get some gain from your pious activities. It allows you self-preservation and sense gratification. And they leave out this. So he's pointing out a huge fault in the understanding, people's general understanding of Dharma. This is everyone is thinking like this. Apart from those who read Srimad Bhagavatam, everyone else is thinking this way. You know, therefore, as described in the second verse of the first chapter, that Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for the pure soul, non-envious. They're not competing enviously with others for sense gratification or competing with the Lord. They're pure, their desires are pure, their heart is pure. The Srimad Bhagavatam is for them because it's pointing out information that you know, those who are not pure in heart, they don't want to hear this. You know. I was listening to a morning walk on the way here. Srila Prabhupada was saying that, a very interesting comment, that there are so many different religions, and he said in one way they're all just different processes manufactured so that somehow or another they don't have to surrender to Krishna. You know, if they're in that category of cheating religions. Religion also, you know, we can has four components: pious activity, religious activities, dharma, artha, economic development, karma, you know, sense gratification, and moksha, liberation. Dharma, artha, karma, and moksha. And they all actually fit within these three categories here of concentrated selfishness, extended selfishness, and mental speculation. They're all one way or another avoiding the conclusion that I'm the eternal servant of Krishna and concentrating on activities and thoughts of anything else but. In verse 11, he's describing what is the nature of the absolute truth. Well, that's a question I posed, actually. Tattvam yaj jnanam advayam. Absolute truth. Here's a breakup of these words. Tattvam, absolute truth. Yaj, which? Jnanam, knowledge. Advayam, non-dual. What is the name? So, here, he's been describing that we should engage in bhakti yoga to Lord Sri Krishna, who is the absolute truth. What is the nature of that absolute truth that we should surrender to? It is non-dual substance. And therefore, we are talking of Krishna as Bhagavan. Krishna as Bhagavan is also Paramatma. Krishna as Bhagavan is also Brahman. Any questions?
Yeah.
Sorry? Yes. They're all the same thing. They're the same thing with manifesting different qualities. For instance, non-dual, if we look out in the distance and we see from 50 miles away a little blue haze on the horizon, we know, oh, that is a mountain. There's the Yuyangs. You know, if you're driving up to the farm, you'll see the Yuyangs on the right there. And but if you go closer, you'll see that it's not just a hay, almost like a cloud-like. You know, it almost looks misty and cloudy from a distance. You may mistake it as something very vague and abstract. When you get closer, you see, oh, a very definite shape with trees and what have you. And then, of course, if you go right up, you can, you know, pat a koala bear and, you know, you can interact with the creatures there. So, it appears to be different things. Or seeing a train from the distance. You see a train from the distance, at first you may think, oh, it's just a light. When it's a little closer, you think, no, it's a light and sound. And when the train comes all the way up, you see it's light, it's sound, and it's full of people. See? So it's non-dual. We're not looking at anything, we're not looking at three different things. That on the track further up the road, there was a light just zooming up the tracks. And then, you know, out of the bushes comes some sound. It's actually the same train. See? So we're Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, it's the same thing. But looking at it, we can only appreciate different qualities of the same thing. From the furthest distance, that means the more materially covered, you know, we can understand Brahman feature. The more purified we are, we may be able to appreciate Brahman and Paramatma. And when we're completely purified, we can understand that that same non-dual substance has the Bhagavan feature as well.
You're saying that all have different features? Each of these has a different feature?
This is, the Brahman is the impersonal, non-differentiated spiritual energy, which is basically the glowing effulgence emanating from the toenails of Lord Sri Krishna. Paramatma is the Purush or the Vishnu, which we will discuss a little later, who is the form of the Lord, who is the super soul within the material world. So he is. So Paramatma is has a personal form and is maintaining the material world, is maintaining the creations, creation, maintenance and destruction of the material world. And Bhagavan is the original personal feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is the Lord in person. And Paramatma is his expansion to deal with the material world. And Brahman is simply his effulgence. I guess that ties in a little bit with the 10 subjects of Srimad Bhagavatam. and the first 9, of course, are all subjects which describe the object, the you know, the one object of Lord Sri Krishna, who is the Samam Bonam. You know, so there. Here, Bhagavan is, would be the object, and Paramatma and Brahman are different subjects of Bhagavan. All right, any other questions?
Yeah. Prabhu, on the same thing, when we are talking about subject and object are qualitatively the same, I was just reading the Vijay Prabhu's he was talking about, known and the known are the same in quality. He was talking about in that line. And then he said in the material world, the knower and the known are different. It, as the known is matter and the knower is spirit, whereas in spiritual world, the knower and the known are both spirit. So that's why he was saying that, you know, when you're talking about these subject matter, both the subject and the object, and that means both the knower and the known are qualitatively the same. Both are spirit.
Yes, that's a good point. Any other comments? Thank you. All right. Can I just ask how's everyone going with their answering the different Purva Svajaya questions? What's that?
Just read the chapter.
Read the chapter? Okay. Alright. Have you got those open? Just open them up for a second. See, what you might want to do is, as it said last time, familiarise yourself with the questions. And as we go through the, you know, class, you know, you can tick them off that we've covered that. And or even just tick it off in your mind, just, you know, that it's good to be very familiar with those questions, because they are I'll bring this up at the end of the class, but in 2 weeks, so not next week, the week after, we'll be having the closed book test, and they'll be from those Purva Swajaya questions. I'll discuss it a little bit more at the end of the lesson, but for now I'm just saying it'll be in 2 weeks' time, or, you know, the second lesson from now, the second time we meet. Yes, yeah. So we'll discuss a little bit later about the retreat and when we have our next lesson. So basically we'll have one more double lesson. There'll be a little bit of review, you know, discussion in there. And the week after that, you'll submit the open book essays, you know, not big essays, little paragraphs, and you'll sit for the closed book exam. You'll find that by the end of today's session, probably the only things that aren't really covered so far will be probably questions 4 to 9 in the second chapter, Divine and Divine Service. Everything else in the first couple, you know, questions by the sages, part 1 and part 2, all of that's covered. It will have been covered. And probably questions 6 and 7 in, you know, chapter 3, Krishna is the source of all incarnations. Apart from that, you should have really ticked all the others off by the end of today's class, that we've covered them, and any you're not sure of, you should have asked me those couple of questions if you're having difficulty with something. There's no real distinction, but the terms have similar meaning. Not really trying to, the question's not really asking you to distinguish between them as to explain what it means. Purva Swajaya questions, analogies, and you may be asked to give a summary of a chapter. The additional questions, because they're part of the class. And quite often those additional questions are actually also in the Purva Swajaya. I'm not even sure why they call them sometimes additional, because they're actually there. A lot of them in the Purva Swajaya. But there's one or two that are not. But yes, additional questions, Purva Swajaya, the analogies, and summaries. Yeah. Not verses yet. That'll come at the end of this module. So we're looking about a year from now. And then, you know, I'll ask you to recite the first module of verses, which is what about. There's 70 altogether in the whole. somewhere there. There's 70 together in the whole of module 1 and 2. And I think half of them will be in this module at the end. Yeah.
And Vasudeva
is a symbol of what? Vasudeva is a symbol of what? Who answered that one?
The symbol of the transcendental position wherein the appearance of the Supreme Lord takes place. I didn't understand.
Oh, you've got the answer?
Got the answer, but I didn't understand.
Read it.
So Vasudeva is a symbol of the transcendental position wherein the appearance of the Supreme Lord takes place.
So Vasudeva is the symbol of the transcendental position. Sudasattva, pure goodness.
The symbol of the transcendental position.
It's the personification of pure goodness.
No, I didn't understand,
because
it's a name. Vasudeva. Krishna is also
named.
Krishna
is
all
attractive. Now, is
Vasudeva having a different meaning? Vasudeva is son of Vasudeva.
Okay. How is it? What page are you looking at? Does everyone have a book? Vasudeva is a symbol of what? And you go to chapter 1, text number 12. Oh, yeah, Vasudeva. Vasudeva is a symbol of the transcendental position wherein the appearance of the Supreme Lord takes place. Yes. So there, of course, Vasudeva is referring to because we've been talking about Vasudeva and Devaki, the mother and father. Vasudeva, from Krishna's father, Krishna appeared. So he's the symbolically representing that from pure transcendental goodness, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears. In the same way that Kamsa represents atheism, is a symbol of atheism. And Vasudeva is a symbol of godliness. And from that godliness, then the Lord appears. When you become godly, the Lord appears. I think that's Vasudeva with the long A. Yeah, Vasudeva. Yeah, with the stroke above the A. No, that's not there? Not in the fourth canto? Okay, yeah. So that is that. Do you have that verse? Yeah. Can you just read that translation?
Yeah. I think I'm always engaged in offering obeisances to Lord Vasudev in pure Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is always pure consciousness, in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Vasudev, is revealed without any covering.
Which and that last Vasudev, did that have a stroke above the eye? The eye?
Yeah. And the last Vasudev. The first in the verse, the verse is starting like Sat Satam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabditam.
Right.
So that Vasudev, there is no stroke.
There's no stroke, and that's saying Sudha Sattva.
Yeah, that is, yeah. Yeah, that is, Vasudev is translated as just Vasudev. But in the translation, it's Krishna consciousness is always in pure Krishna consciousness. I am always engaged in offering obeisance to Lord Vasudev in pure Krishna consciousness. And Krishna consciousness is always pure consciousness.
Pure consciousness, yeah, pure consciousness, yeah. in that sense, we have Vasudev Pradyumna, Vasudev Sankarshan Pradyumna and Aniruddha. Vasudev is personifies pure consciousness. Sankarshan personifies the ego. Pradyumna personifies the intelligence and the senses, and Aniruddha personifies the mind. Like that. So, in that sense, Nirmala? Yeah. You don't have to have, at this point, you know, a huge scholastic understanding, you know, because we will cover that, you know. There's only one sentence there. We haven't discussed. So, you know, if you're going through our classes and you'll see that, you know, we haven't done a whole discussion on that. There's not a lot in that. You really just have to be able to answer that question with that sentence, and that's enough. Certainly, if you're not sure, some things you want to know now, you can see me after class. But apart from that, we will, you know, discuss these things in greater detail when time comes. All right? So it's sufficient now. So some questions, if you found that you haven't covered them in the course of, you know, up to now, I mentioned that you pretty much should have ticked off a whole bunch of them except for a few. If there's some that you're really stuck on, see me after class. And I'll help you, you know, not answer them, but understand them. And that way we'll just keep going with the subject matter we need to get through. Also, I want to see those who did Bhakti Shastri with me, you know, in the last time. If we can see them after class, if you've got a few minutes, just tidy a few things up with you. All right, so let's move along. Where were we? Oh, no one saw that, did they? Okay. You had a question before?
Yes, I was just referring to Vasudeva. Vasudeva.
Well, yeah, just very briefly, Vasudeva, when we have the stroke above the A, so it's a long A, Vasudeva, that refers to Krishna. That is discussed in the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Srila Vyasadeva describes that Lord Sri Krishna is the son of Vasudeva, so therefore Lord Sri Krishna is Vasudeva, and that Vasudeva, who is the son of Vasudeva, is described in the Vedic literatures to be the absolute truth. So he offers obeisances to him. Yes, but one has a long A and one has a short A.
So,
just a little bit of difference in the pronunciation. Who's good at Sanskrit? Someone say Krishna's father?
Vasudeva.
What's that? Vasudeva. Vasudeva. You're going to confuse me. Krishna?
Vasudeva.
Vasudeva. So you get that? Should be as clear as, you know. Say it again. The first one?
Vasudeva.
What? Vasudeva. Vasudeva? Like real quick. Vasudeva. and then Vasudeva. So you give a little extra for Krishna. Alright. Chapter 3, just a very quick overview. In the first five verses, the roles of the various avatars, incarnations of the Lord, are discussed. In verses 6 to 27, 22 Lila avatars, incarnations of the Lord, are described. Verses 28 to 29 describe that Krishnastu Bhagavan Svayam, that Lord Sri Krishna is the origin of all incarnations, and his pastimes and the pastimes of his avatars should be heard morning and evening. Verses 30 to 39 describe that the material forms of the Lord, the Vishvarupa and the Jiva, the living entity, are imaginary. So rather than focusing on them, instead one should focus and hear and chant about the Lord's incarnations in his spiritual forms. And the final verses up to 49, which we will discuss. Now, all of that in chapter 3 we're discussing today, except for the last 9 verses where we'll discuss next time we meet, where Sudha Goswami glorifies the Srimad Bhagavatam as the incarnation of Krishna and describes how the Srimad Bhagavatam was transferred from Vyas to Sukha to Sudha Goswami. Alright, so what we're going to do now is we're going to do a group what do they call it? Group presentation, and then we're going to so I'm going to break you up into 3 groups. I will give you each a set of verses. One group will be refuting demigod worship. One group will be analysing the various incarnations, and one group will be explaining why Sri Krishna is Bhagavan Svayam. We will do that. You will be in your groups for... Let me see, where have I got that? Uh, Okay. Now, about 15 minutes present preparation. Heaps of time. And 5 to 10 minutes for each group. I want to leave about, you know, at least 35 to 40 minutes to just round up a few things in the class, which means that somewhere around about 20 past 5 or something like that, we want to round it up, this group exercise, and be just rounding up this session. if anyone wants to have a, I'll hand out these. I'll get you to first form your groups while you're all here. I'll hand out a slip to each of your groups, and then if you want to have a quick break for a couple of minutes, then do that, and then come back to your group. Keep in mind, you know, you've got 10 to 15 minutes, and there's a fair bit to cover, especially if you may not have studied as you should have, and it's going to be very difficult. All right. Can I also ask that if anyone wants to see me about paying for the books. Now, Kundalata, is it $25 for the two or 25? It is $25 for the two. If anyone's leaving, before anyone leaves today, could they please mark the attendance sheet and also make sure that there's, if they've got books, that there's a red dot next to their name. And if they're going to pay, come and see me at that before you leave. You don't have to pay today, but if you're going to, you know, just at least make sure that the details are correct on the attendance sheet there before you leave. All right, I'm going to hand these out. Okay. All right. You want to form three groups, and anyone left out, I'll shuffle into a group. The second chapter, yes. I'll go back, but I won't go forward because I've got some things there I don't want you to see. Where are we? All right. Let's have a look at our groups. Prabhu, can I get you to come into this one? Yeah, just to make up the numbers. What's that? 2, 4, 6. 2, yes, come into this one. Come into, yeah. What's that? Alright, so there's someone there. He's gone, yeah. So we've got 6 there, and we've got 4 men there, so because there's one coming back. So 2 ladies can come into this group. 6, and then 2, 4, 6, 7. That'll be all right. No? What's that?
I didn't read the third chapter.
All right. Come into the handy. Who read the third chapter?
You can do it for the chapter 2 something.
All right. So we have a new facilitator. I don't know. No. It's okay. I'm going to point you in the direction of the verses, all right? And you've got 15 minutes. Okay. So, I'll give you the easy one. Who did read the third chapter? What's that? Parts. So, look, he's an asset, that one. Who's read it before? Yeah, look, yeah, okay. All right, you'll be right. Before. Okay. All right. Let me see amongst the ladies who's, you know, feels confident with the third chapter. that you said you read? To some, yeah, come into this side, alright? So some of the ladies can come into this side because I know Dale, you quite often, Dale's well read, and you've read it.
Not for a while,
but you have read it, yeah. Alright. Over there. Okay. Is that group there? This group, come in a little tighter. Yeah, come in. Alright. Yep. And there's one more coming back there. Here you come in over here. Okay. So, alright, you're a group there? Okay. Who would like to choose? No? Hey there. Who's gonna? He's looking for some. Who would like to choose?
No, we don't have any choice.
You get it. Now, how do I turn this off for a second? I'll turn it off while you're thinking. You sure? No, because you can put two.
No, because I believe that part, so it's good. Yeah.
It's better to leave it on. You sure? Okay, alright, we'll just leave it on. Yeah, that's okay. You should. I think they should get a system that you can actually pause that.
I think you can pause it.
Yeah. There must be some.
Either you can pause. Yeah, you can pause it.
Yeah.
Now it's recording.
That's recording. Yeah. The hold. Activate the hold. Okay. Okay, we're going to introduce yourself and your topic. Yep.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So our topic is refute demigod worship.
Refuting demigod worship. Okay, everyone can. But no. The 5 more minutes was at home. Listen.
So basically, we have classified the analysis under 4 titles. First is the modes, of material nature, in which the demigods and the Supreme Lord are associated or unassociated. So basically, Lord Brahma is the control of mode of passion, and Lord Shiva is the mode of ignorance. Whereas Vishnu is the controller mode of goodness. At the same time, verse 26 says that Lord Vishnu is above the 3 modes. So the demigods are within the modes, material modes, whereas Lord Vishnu is above the 3 modes. Second, regarding the position of the demigods and that of Lord Vishnu, very nice analogy is given, that of a manager and kings. The manager are like the demigods. So if there is a material affairs, the demigods are the managers. However, they are also under the jurisdiction of the laws given by the king. So the king is Vishnu, whereas the managers are demigods. Also, in the 28th and the 29th, the 2 last verses in the section, it is said, Vasudeva Parat, he is the supreme, in the revealed scripture, the ultimate object of knowledge is Sri Krishna. So, and all the performance of sacrifice and all the activities of yogis is ultimately meant for the satisfaction of Lord Sri Krishna. So, the ultimate object is Krishna. So, Krishna's position is very clearly mentioned, distinct from that of the demigods. Then, third category is about the motivation of the worshippers. So, basically the demigod worshippers are motivated by material desires. So, it's a list of material desires are given in the verse. And also we can see from Bhagavad Gita, in the 7th chapter it is said, Kamaisai se hridagyana pravajyante anya devataha. That is, those who are impelled by the material desires, they approach the demigods. Whereas, the devotees, those who are serious about liberation, they just worship Vishnu. So the motivation is clearly different. And next, the results, what the demigods can give and what the Supreme Lord can give. The demigods can basically award material benefits. And whereas Vishnu, he gives the liberation. So it's Mukti Pradaya is Vishnu, even Lord Shiva says. And Bhagavad Gita it is mentioned, Devan Devejo Yanti Madhvakta Yanti Mamapi. So those who worship demigods, they go to the demigod planet for the more material comforts and more enjoyment, whereas Madhvakta, the devotees of Krishna, he goes to the spiritual abode where Krishna resides. So in that regard there is a very nice analogy regarding Krishna. Vishnu is the maintainer of the person and all the living entities are within the person. So a maintainer can actually release one person from the person. Whereas an inmate of the prison cannot release another inmate. So the demigods are another inmate. We are bound by the modes of material nature. So only for material benefits one can go to demigods, but for liberation cannot.
Very good. Very nice. All right. Any questions? Anyone have any comments or questions on that? Okay, very good.
Prabhu, one question. Given the text and the analogy is given about the prison house, but we have also in different classes so heard an analogy about Durga Devi being the material world being called as the Durga. And Durga Devi being called as the maintainer of the prison house. So, aren't these two analogies contradicting, or in what way they are related, or in what way they are contradicting? I didn't get that. Because here, Vishnu is called as the maintainer, whereas from those examples I've also heard Durga Devi being called as the maintainer of the prison house. That's why Durga means prison. They suffer from there only about that.
Okay, so from how would you answer that? That he's saying that Durga is the maintainer of the prison house, and he's saying Vishnu is the maintainer of the prison. It seems to be making.
But the ultimate maintainer is Vishnu, because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that Devi Krishna, Mama Maya Duritaya, because that divine energy, Durga Devi, is my energy. So ultimately, even though she is maintainer, but the ultimate maintainer is still Krishna. So even Durga is, is reporting to Krishna. So if Krishna doesn't sanction, then Durga Devi cannot release.
So, with reference to one of your analogies, how would you help him understand that?
Okay, that in that sense, the maintainer, we can see Vishnu is the maintainer. Because if we see the three departments, that is Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu, Vishnu is the maintainer. Because
And with your analogy, how would you...
Oh, you mean in terms of the maintainer?
In terms of an analogy, going back to your prison,
yeah.
How could you clarify the, what, you know...
In terms of the analogy, if we consider Krishna, Vishnu as the maintainer,
yes.
Then the position of Durga, she is working under this
Krishna.
This maintainer Vishnu. So she is actually
superintendent, yes. And he and Vishnu would be like
the government.
So did you get that? The difference between, it's not wrong to say that Durga is the superintendent of the prison, so she's maintaining the prison, but above even the superintendent, you have the state, or the king.
So I recently was reading this book written by our guru, Guru Maharaj, the faith book by Kadam Maharaj. There, you know, he mentioned...
By who?
Kadam Kanan Swami.
Yep.
Kadam Kanan Swami. The faith book, you know, where he states that in the Devi Puran, it says that Durga is Radha and Durga is Krishna. There is no difference, and one who differentiates between that. He does mention that, you know, the Durga of this material world is different from the actual Durga. So what is this actual Durga and what is the Durga of material world?
Well, there's a transcendental Durga, and then there's...
That is the thing, then these two are the same then.
No, there is a transcendental Durga, and from that transcendental Durga expands the this Durga who maintains the material world.
So when there is that Durga is Krishna, does that mean that is talking about the transcendental Durga?
Well, one is it's the difference between Mahamaya, Yogamaya, and Mahamaya. Right? We know the Yogamaya is the Lord's energy acting, you know, spiritually. Mahamaya is when His same energy is acting, you know, in a material way. Same energy, but at the same time, you know. Yogamaya expands as the personality of Durga. So in other words, you know, and Yogamaya herself, she has various expansions. In Vrindavan she's Purnamasi, in Dwarka she's Subhadra. You know, different, the expansions have different forms, different activities, different moods, but at this, you know, in the same, we discussed before about Advayam or non-dual substance. Krishna's energy is one, but at the same time there is a qualitative difference when that energy expands for a particular function. And we don't, and therefore, for instance, if you take electricity to heat something to warm up your house, and you take the same electricity to cool down a fridge, right? And you may say, well, it's the same electricity. I want to get warm. I'm going to go to the fridge. Same electricity. I want to get warm, I'll go to the fridge. It doesn't work, does it? You have to go to the heater. It's the very same electricity, but it's working in a different capacity. So there's a qualitative difference. So you cannot go to Mahamaya, the material Durga, and expect to advance in Bhakti Yoga. You have to go to the transcendental Durga, the Yogamaya Durga, to advance in transcendental life, although the energy is one. So it's not wrong to say that they're different, but if you think that you can approach Mahamaya in the same way that you approach Radharani, that's incorrect. Alright, so very good, very nice presentation. Any feedback? Good, thumbs up. Alright. I've jotted down a couple of points here as well, and you did very nicely. 23, there's the analogy of the state maintains the prison. So Vishnu maintains the material world. The demigods, they can offer facility within the prison, but they can't get you out of the prison. In one sense, the demigods are like the prison staff. You're saying they're inmates. There's a slight difference between the demigods. In one sense, we can say that they are still controlled by the laws of the prison, but in a different way to the prisoners. Right? So there's a slight, we can't just say they're all inmates, but at the same, we can say that they're all still under rules and regulations of the prison system. But there will be a difference between the demigods as staff under rules and regulations and the inmates under rules and regulations. 24, 25, by approaching Vishnu, we rise to sattva, we rise to the absolute truth. With the demigods, we get material results, so different results. 26, the Vishnu tattvas, they are equal power with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they're not jiva tattva, whereas the demigods, you know, they're jiva tattva. We cannot attain, they cannot independently attain liberation, what to speak of give it. They're not on the level of Vishnu tattva. And Bhagavad Dharma, the universal religion, pure, so you picked up the motivation. It's it has universal application and is pure and supreme, whereas demigod worship is a perverse religion. Vasudeva Para Veda, you picked up that as well. The Vedas confirm Sri Krishna as the goal, supreme goal. The analogies, both managers and prisoners are bound by the king's laws. So that way we see how even the staff are still under the laws. But the king is not, you know, he's above all the laws. And the king, Krishna, is always transcendental to the laws of the prison or the material world. So you covered that very, very well, very nicely, so well done. All right, will I flip this over? No. All right, group number two. Now, you can rub that off if you like.
Okay.
Yeah, unless you want to change the... I don't think it's plugged in, it's probably easier to just rub it off. Do you grab a scribe? Is someone going to help you? Or?
Are we supposed to...
Yep. Write it up. Yeah, someone can write up. If you just mention, you know, you can give them a sentence they can write up and then you can explain it to us.
Okay.
Someone like to...
Okay, so we're the second group. Topic was analyze the five different types of avatars. Chapter 3, text 1 to 5. So in the first verse... Chapter 3, the first line, it says, Godhead Purusham Rupam, saying that in the beginning the Lord accepted the universal Purusha incarnation. So, that is in the beginning of creation. And then in the third chapter, in the second verse, in the purport, Prabhupada is saying that the conclusion is that the Purusha avatar manifested three features, which is Karanadakashi Vishnu or Mahavishnu, and Garbhadakashi Vishnu, who lies in the Garbha ocean, and Sridakashi Vishnu, who is the super soul, who is in the milk ocean, in Sveta, Svetadvipa. So these are three.
You can put just GV if you like.
So Mahavishnu lies in the causal ocean and the universes come out of the pores, and then he enters into each universe's Garbhadakashi Vishnu and lays on the Sesha bed in the Garbha, in the universe half filled with water. And Lord Brahma is born in the lotus flower, which comes out, and then he does a secondary creation, and then Sridakashi Vishnu is enters into the hearts of all the living entities, and he resides in the milk ocean there. So, and then from the fifth verse, it's described how all the incarnations, all the different lila avatars, are emanations from the Sridakashi Vishnu, who's in the milk ocean in the universe. So, in some of the lila avatars are Matsya, Korma, Varaha. Yeah, it's amazing. Vamana Dev. Yeah. You could say Krishna, he's not really a, he's the source of all incarnations, even the Mahavishnu. So you could say that he's an emanation from the Super Soul. But, yeah. And then we have the Yuga avatars. It describes how they come in different colors. In Satya Yuga, is of a white color. In Treta Yuga, he's in of a red color. And in Dwarapa Yuga, a blackish color. And in Kali Yuga, a yellow color. So these are the Yuga avatars. So these are all Vishnu Tattva. And then there's the Guna avatars, explaining how those for the man. You have the three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. So these are three gunas, and so there's a different personality in charge of each of these three gunas. And so we have Vishnu, who's in charge of the mode of goodness, and he's non-different from Krishna. So he's Vishnu Tattva. And then the Shiva, he's in charge of Tamagun, or the mode of ignorance, and he's in a marginal position. So he's in between the living entities and the supreme. He's not on the level of Vishnu, but he's not a living entity either. So, and he explained this like milk and curd. Curd is made from milk, but it's different to milk. So similarly, Krishna doesn't come in contact with the material energy. So as Shiva, he is there to interact with the material energy. So, and then there's Brahma, who he's in charge of mode of creation. So, and that he's generally a living entity, but when there's no one qualified, then Vishnu or Krishna will take this position himself. So, so these are generally, while Shiva's, he's in between the living entity and the supreme, and Vishnu's non-different from Krishna, and Brahma's usually a living entity, but sometimes. And then we have Manvantara avatars. It's 14 in a day of Brahma. So, and these are generally, well, the word man comes from Manu, is it?
Yeah.
And so these, Manu's the father of mankind, and he wrote the Manu Samhita, which is the laws of human society. So he's a world descendant of Manu, I guess, and he's there for several, maybe 71 yuga cycles, is it? Something like that.
Each Manu, yeah. Each 14 Manus, and each one.
So it's like Manu is a position which is held by different one living entity qualified enough, and they change over every 14 in a day of Brahma. And then there's the Shakti Vaisya avatars, who are empowered living entities or reflections of the Lord's might. So I mean, later on the Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll hear about Situ Maharaj. He's a Shakti Vaisya avatar. It's a living entity, particularly empowered to do the work of the Lord. It's not the it's not Vishnu, it's not the Lord, but it's a living entity empowered to do the Lord's work. And then there's the other category, is could be a reflection of the Lord's might, like Indra or someone like that, who's Indra's a position, the king of the heavenly planets. This Krishna, he describes in the 10th canto how I can't remember the verse, but he says
10th chapter,
yeah, 10th chapter, right. Is it of kings I'm Indra or something, is it, or of
all the kings I'm considered Indra, of all the
demigods, of sages, of Narada, so on. And he said these are Shakti based avatars or reflections of the Lord's might. So, and then we quoted one verse from the Bhagavad Gita, the Sanskrit, which is here, it's chapter 11, text 15. And it's Krishna is showing Arjuna's universal form, and Arjuna is seeing all the universal manifestations. And he says, Arjuna vacha vashyami devam stava deva dehi sarvam stata bhuta vishesha sangam Ramanam Isham Kamalasana Stam Rishim Chasarban Urugam Chadivyam. And he's saying, my dear Lord Krishna, I see assembled in your body all the demigods and various other living entities. I see Brahma sitting on the lotus flower, as well as Lord Shiva and all the sages and divine servants. I don't know if you want to hear the prayer for it. It's a short one, it's a short prayer. Okay, read the purple. Arjuna sees everything in the universe, therefore he sees Brahma, who is the first creature in the universe, and the celestial serpent upon which the Garbhatakashi Vishnu lies in the lower regions of the universe. This snake bed is called Vasuki. There are also other snakes known as Vasuki. Arjuna can see from the Garbhatakashi Vishnu up to the topmost part of the universe on the lotus flower planet where Brahma, the first creature of the universe, resides. That means that from the beginning to the end, everything could be seen by Arjuna, who was sitting in one place on his chariot. This was possible by the grace of the Supreme Lord Krishna.
Anyone has any questions or comments?
Yeah? So, you mentioned Vidhata is coming from Shiradaksha Vishnu, is that right? Or, just wanted to know what about the other Yuga avatars, Guna avatars, Manvantara avatars, where are they coming from? Since you mentioned Lila avatar, the second part, they are coming from Shiradaksha Vishnu.
Yeah, they are emanations of Shiradaksha Vishnu.
The
Yuga avatars are the same, they're Vishnu Tattva, I think, aren't they? Is that right? And then the Guna avatars is, like I was saying, Vishnu is Vishnu Tattva, he's not different from the Supreme Lord. Brahma is usually Jiva Tattva, but if there's no qualified Jiva to take that place, then Krishna or Vishnu would do that himself. He does that with the Chakyavesha avatars as well, positions like Indra, things like that. If there's no qualified, sometimes Vishnu will have to take that position himself. And the Manvantara avatars are—it's like a position in the universe. So when there's a qualified living entity to take that position, and they swap over every 14 times in one day, Brahma. So they're Jiva Tattva, Manvantara avatars, and the Shaktivesha avatars are all Jiva Tattva as well. They're living entities.
How are they connected to, you know, Mahavishnu or Garbhadaksha Vishnu? Are they connected in some way, or they're not connected at all?
Jiva Tattva means they're living entities like us, but they're particularly qualified and they get a higher position in universal management. Vishnu Tattva means they're supreme, they're on the level of Vishnu or Supreme Lord. And these are different lila avatars like Matsya, Korma, Braha, Vamanadev, so on. So some of them, you'll find with some of these, there's usually a living entity who's particularly qualified. And then, but sometimes, if there's no living entity that's qualified, then Krishna will take that place himself. So.
Alright. Okay, I'd like to. Very well done. Let's see, I get a couple of notes here as well. Alright, so text one, of course, is referring to Karanadaksha Vishnu. The inner soul of the collective universes, or the super soul of the, you know, Prakriti, Mahatattva, like that. Second verse, speaking about Garbhadaksha Vishnu, who's the super soul or inner soul of the collective living beings. Shiradaksha Vishnu was mentioned in that purport. He's also actually discussed in the second chapter with reference to maintaining the mature universe later in the second chapter. But in the purport he's discussed here. Some of the analogies which are given there in the purport, Mahavishnu, a tree decorates itself with fruit, describing how Mahavishnu, by his own will, by his own mystic potency, you know, expands all the different universes. There's another nice analogy there that describing how the material ingredients don't have creative power, just as the a goat's fleshy neck bags cannot produce milk. Some couple of nice analogies. I'm not sure if you picked up any analogies in there. You could have thrown some of those in, but there was a discussion about the Virata Roop. That's one of the avatars, not quite discussed, one of the incarnations or expansions of the Lord, but it is described, it's especially meant for the neophytes because it is a imaginary form. There was a nice analogy there about the president's car, where actually that comes up later on. You wouldn't have picked it up in there, but just like if you look, and even though you can't see the president, but you can see, oh, there his car. So you're looking. You can't actually see the president, but you know, oh yes, this is he's there. So people who can't actually see the spiritual form of the Lord or the spirit soul, they'll see, oh yes, there is the universal form. There's the Lord like that. So pointing in the direction. Verse 5, then, especially within the purport, there was a discussion of the six different types of avatars. We had Guna, Lila, the Purush, Manvatara, Yuga, Satyavesha. Satyavesha avatars, of course, have a direct manifestation, such as, Pritu. Sometimes they're jivas. Seisha is sometimes also counted. Ananta Seisha Naga is counted as a directly empowered incarnation, Saktivesh. You didn't mention the word vibhutis, but indirect would be the vibhutis, like the Manvantaras. And Brahma would also come in this category of directly empowered. As a guna avatar. There was... Yes?
On one hand, how we can say Brahma as an avatar, yet we also say that he is a jiva tattva?
Shaktivesha avatar, directly empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Is that there in that chart?
Yes.
Yeah, directly empowered. does that answer that? Yep. In the fifth verse, it describes that from Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, all the incarnations are expanded. Now, I believe also in the purport of the second verse, it says, from Chiradakshaya Vishnu, all the incarnations expanded. And somewhere, maybe again in the fifth verse, I think in the purport, it says that from Chiradakshaya Vishnu, all the incarnations are expanded. So, we have to take the, if you read the translation to text 5, someone can read that. Someone got that? Chapter 3, text 5.
This form, the second manifestation of the Purusha,
Garbhodakshaya Vishnu,
is the source and indestructible seed of multifarious incarnations.
That's enough. So it describes there, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu in the translation, the source of the multifarious incarnations. Okay? So therefore, we understand. Where did Lord Brahma come from? Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. In that sense, we couldn't really say that he expanded from Chiradakshaya Vishnu, could we? Because he was, he expanded from Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Yep.
Is it applicable to all other Leela avatars also?
Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is the source of the three guna avatars, who is Vishnu, Brahma and Shiva. That means he's the source of Chiradakshaya Vishnu, Brahma and Shiva. Right. So, technically Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is the seed of all incarnations. Having expanded himself as Chiradakshaya Vishnu, the incarnations then do emanate, appear from Shiradakshaya Vishnu. Those who haven't already appeared, including himself, he's already appeared, and Brahma has already appeared. So others, they all expand from Shiradakshaya Vishnu once he has manifested. Demigods, you know, unless they're counted as guna avatars that may be directly empowered by the Lord, yes, then.
They are actually considered as Vamsha, because the living entities are considered as living Vamsha, they're separated. And the Vishnu Dhatva is generally considered as Vamsha. So even the demigods like Indra, Adi, Agni, are they considered as.
From Svamsha comes Vibhinamsa, the Jivas. So it's like a further expansion.
So even the demigods are considered as
Svamsa. An expansion of Svamsa, as Vibhinamsa.
As Vibhinamsa.
Mm. Expansion of expansion.
Okay.
I'm not completely happy with this chart.
Yeah.
And I've seen another one, I'm not completely happy with that. I'll tell you why. What page is that on?
It's on 25.
It's very good, but it doesn't show... all the relationships and technicalities. There's a few things that sort of, as you're speaking now, you know, which there's some slight subcategories may need to be listed, and the links between some of them are not quite as well defined. So, for instance, you know, we come down on that left side with the Velas. We have the forearm forms of Vishnu, Prabhava Velas, Vaibhava Velas. So there's the first Chaturvyuha and the second Chaturvyuha. And it appears that there's no real link between them. But as we know that Karanadakshay Vishnu is an expansion of Sankarshan, Garbhadakshay Vishnu is an expansion of Prajumna, and Kshiradakshaya Vishnu is an expansion of Aniruddha. So there's actually should be an arrow drawn to link those. There's a few, you know, don't take this as the absolute, you know, that it's stated here, there's nothing else to it. There's a few things here I'm not completely happy with, but it's good enough to get you by. Alright? But I didn't draw it. Both. Yeah.
So just by reading the third chapter, would not know the complete links? Is that what you mean to say? Because
no, you won't know just from reading the third chapter. And you won't completely know from that chart. But it certainly gives you a really solid foundation of an understanding. There's just a few little, you know, things here and there. Right. But pretty much, you know, just don't take it as if there's everything's listed there and there's nothing else to be known. There's a few minor adjustments. I've never seen a chart which really completed properly. I've always sort of seen that some of the links are not there and some things are actually even wrong. But, you know, that's good. I'm not sure who did it, but it's very good. Any other... further questions? Very well done. Final group. If you can come and make your presentation.
Krishna, as the third group, we are going to present why Sri Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam. We want to start with stating that Supreme Lord is considered to be one who is full of all opulences. There are six opulences like wealth, fame, beauty, knowledge, strength and renunciation. We want to give you here the examples like Lord Rama is example of one of the opulences like fame. Lord Balarama, Vamana, Mohini are the examples of beauty. Dattatreya, Matsya, Kumara, Kapila are the examples of knowledge. Nara and Narayana Rishis are examples of renunciation. But Lord Sri Krishna's body is full in all of these opulences, so it's considered to be Bhagavan Swayam. One more point is
just put time 6. some shorthand. You better keep going, Padma. Don't wait for the scribe.
The next is that it's mentioned in the Purport that Lord Sri Krishna is complete with 64 principal attributes, whereas all his Vishnu Tattvas possess only 93% of the attributes. Lord Shiva has 84% and Lord Brahma has 78%. The Jivas, depending on their position and their pious activities, are present with different percentage of the attributes. And it is also mentioned in the Purport that Swayam, the word which is given, is to confirm that Lord Krishna has no other source. He is the source himself. It signifies the supremacy of Lord Sri Krishna as Sumam Punam, meaning there is no one like him. There is a one without a second. We want to support this with the quote 10.8, wherein Krishna says, I am the source of all spiritual material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their heart. It is also said in the Purport that Srila Jiva Goswami, in accordance with authoritative sources, states that Lord Krishna is the source of all other incarnations. And there is also one more statement in the Purport saying, all the symptoms of Supreme Truth are present in full in Lord Sri Krishna only. This is again supported by Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7.7, wherein he is saying that there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me, as pearls are strung upon a thread. And in the end, we want to end it with a quote from Brahma Samhita, wherein it is stated, Krishna is the Supreme Lord, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Sachid Ananda Vigraha, Anadi Radir Govinda, Sarva Karana Karanam. This explains that Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan and there is no one superior to Krishna.
Very good. Any questions? No, clap until after the question session. That's the real tester. Any questions from the pundits and everyone? Looks like you got everyone satisfied, all right? Okay. Very well done. Thank you. All right, just to wrap up there, let's have a look at some of the points. Some of the Sanskrit words, of course, which are, you know, particularly important to quote. You know, Etecha Amsa, all these plenary portions, Kalaha, Pumsaha, portions of the plenary portions of the Supreme. So, all of the above mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions of the Lord. So, the Sanskrit itself, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam, but Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in person. So, in this way, the verse, the Sanskrit, the verse is distinguishing Krishna from all other avatars. He is counted amongst the avatars, but that's out of his causeless mercy he descends. So, you know, we can count Krishna as one of the avatars because he does descend. An avatar is one who descends. And he may even appear through Shri Akshaya Vishnu. But even though that's how he makes his entrance, he's distinguished from all of them as being, it says, they're all plenary portions or portions of them, of the Lord. Right? So they're all parts of the Lord. A nice analogy there. Did you pick up that? The light bulb? You had it but forgot to say it. Alright, you get half a mark for that. So, the powerhouse itself is not limited by the little light bulbs, by a small light bulb. So, Krishna appears in various expansions, and they display some of his qualities or opulences to some degree, but they're still non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it doesn't limit them as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And you've picked up there that there's a list, some of the different avatars which describe some of his different opulences. And then we understood that Krishna has 64 of the transcendental qualities in full. Narayana has 60, Brahma and Shiva 55, and the Jiva is 50. Or in the purport, if we put it in percentages, it's like that. Some minor adjustments to that, because the Jivas can have, of the 64 qualities, they can have up to 50. But even if they have those 50, they might have them minutely. So of the transcendental qualities, whereas Krishna has those 50 qualities, and so does Narayan and Brahma, but they can have them fully. So there's still a slight distinction there. And then we have Shiva and Brahma. They have the 50 in full plus an extra 5. But those extra 5, they only have partially. They're only fully manifest in Narayan, who has the 55 manifest fully, and he has an extra 5 which are manifested partially, but which are there in Krishna fully. So Krishna has all 60 fully, plus an extra 4 that no one else has. He does, but he doesn't display. That's what the example of the light bulb is. He doesn't display all of the qualities that Krishna displays. Sweet pastimes, plays the flute, surrounded by sweet devotees, and is it threefold bending form? His beautiful form, of course. Yeah. Anything else? Thanks. All right. Any questions? Comments?
How do you define plenary portion?
Plenary portion. Let's look it up. Plenary, as far as it's the same. What's that? Yeah, it's. Yeah. Good idea to have one of these. Who asked me? Could you ask me a question? We looked up dative, right? And, you know, for some of the words that Srila Prabhupada uses, you know, some of the smaller dictionaries may not be enough. You know, something of this size is good. What do we got? Plenary. Plenary. To be attached, to be attended by all members, that's one usage. Or a second usage is entire. Unqualified. It comes from the Latin plenus, which means full. So it comes from the word full, entire. So they're full portions. They're entire. The Lord is entirely there in that expansion. But they don't display all the qualities. But they don't display. Where is he? There he is. Krishna. I'm supposed to point. Is that your point, I think? Huh? I'm supposed to point at deities with your finger. You can go like this. Krishna is in Vrindavan. That is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, relaxing at home with his family and friends. When he's displaying his majesty as the supreme lord of all that be, that is Narayan. Specifically, the spiritual kingdom. As the lord of the material realm, he is Vishnu. That's when the lord is at work, he is Vishnu. So, in the same way that, you know, when you're at home, you display a different set of qualities and activities than when you go to work. But it doesn't mean that you're any less when you're at work. And if there is a particular task to be done, for instance, if someone attacked someone very dear to you, you may show your anger. that doesn't mean that that's the only quality you're capable of. So when the Lord displays his anger as Lord Nrisimhadev, you know, he's personifying that anger in its perfection. It doesn't mean that he doesn't have other moods. You know, it's the same person, but these are eternal forms. All of these Leela avatars that are Vishnu Tattva, they have a form in the spiritual world, an Orion form, a forearm form. They manifest slightly differently when they come to the material world to perform a particular pastime. Alright, so I'll just you car parked a question the other week about we will take it up next week. It was from the third verse of the first chapter about rasa, why living entities, why, you know, you can only exchange rasa. Was it you? Yeah, you can only exchange. Where, did you write that down? Where did you write it? Ah, on this one?
No.
On my one? Is it?
No, it's a new one.
A new one? Oh, yeah, it's probably up in Andrew's office. I was looking for it. Anyway, I looked it up. From what I can understand, in the Nectar Devotion, the reason that, you know, different species can't exchange rasa with other species is because it is what you call. There are three different types of rasa bas. There's an imitation, a perversion, or, you know, something which is not actually what it is, and one other, which I had on a note somewhere. One other. But basically, as I said last time, it means that you know, when everything is not present for rasa to manifest, then the only thing that can manifest is something that appears like rasa, but is not the actual thing. So therefore you gave the example that sometimes, you know, someone may love their dog and the dogs appear to love them and what have you. If we analyze it very carefully, you'll see that they're, you know, an appearance or a perversion or an imitation of a real relationship, but the real relationship is not actually there. And, you know, and to be able to taste, you know, the mellow of that relationship is not really there. And, you know, in the Nectar Devotion, there are a whole lot of ingredients that need to be there. You know, there are four different types of bhavas. Vibhava, Sanchari bhava, Vyabhibhavichara, and Astika, Sattva bhava, like that. Those four different types of ingredients need to be there in order for rasa to actually manifest and be tasted. So, you know, when they're not there, it just can't happen. Any other quick questions just before we just have a little discussion about coming events? Yes, yeah. Lord Brahma has, you know, the 50 qualities that Jivas, any of the Shaktivesha avatars, which are a Jiva, who have been empowered by the Lord, they can manifest those 50 qualities of the Jivas fully. Jivas that haven't been empowered by the Lord can only manifest them minutely. Apart from that, Brahman and Shiva can manifest 5 other qualities partially, but Lord Shiva would manifest them slightly more than Lord Brahma. Yeah, what was it? 78. Yes. Well, in the it describes also there, you know, listed under Brahma and Shiva, 55. This must be from Nectar of Devotion or something. Is that so? That part there is not. That must be from Nectar of Devotion. So your question is, why have I put Brahma and Shiva as 84? Fifty-five out of 64, is that 84%? Who's got a calculator? Yeah. This is from Harinam Chintamani. You know, all these extra little bits of information. And within Harinam Chintamani, it is described there. And I've also seen it written somewhere else as well, that, you know, Brahma, he can have the 50 qualities in full and 5 partially. Now, so for instance, if we take the position of Brahma, Brahma sort of starts from this position of 78% and can, you know, having those 5 partially, he can have more than 78%. But Lord Shiva, having those 5 extra qualities more than Brahma, then he is further towards 84%, or, you know, actually 84%. You see? So, Lord Brahma, the minimum is 78%, but he can develop, you know, between 78 and 84%. Whereas Shiva would be, you know, probably 84, you know, more. Lord Shiva's qualities are not so much developing like a Jiva as Brahma's would be. Brahma is a Jiva, so his qualities develop from, you know, up and up. Lord Shiva would remain constant, perhaps on the 84, and Brahma is hovering between 78 and 84. So there's little, you know, these little technicalities, as we say, you know, pop up. We should keep in mind the basic understanding, especially we're only on chapter 3. All right? And that's good enough to quote. And then as other information comes in, then you have to know how to fit it in and why. Lord Vishnu? not necessarily. No. In the same way that, for instance, Srila Prabhupada describes, you know, he wants Varnashram College, you know, to be established. And he wants that the devotees will even teach the sudras how to be sudras. No, that's a fact. And he's saying, but that doesn't mean that the devotee becomes a sudra. That whether a devotee is teaching sudras or a devotee is teaching brahmanas, the devotee is just as dear and just as qualified. So we shouldn't, if we see one devotee teaching sudras and we think, oh, you know, he's less qualified, and this devotee is teaching brahmanas, he's a more qualified. That's an incorrect statement. So when Vishnu teaches, looks after the universe, you know, he doesn't become less qualified in doing that. All right, so let's just have a look at, well, we've pretty much discussed it, but basically, what are we doing next week, next Saturday? There's a retreat, is that correct? Who's going? Yeah. Yeah. So probably about half going. All right. Now, what I want to do, generally, is to just keep ploughing through the classes each Saturday. That's going to be my policy. Otherwise, a 2-year course will become a 10-year course. That's a fact. Happens very easily. So, at the same time, I don't want to, you know, there's always going to be something, but we don't always want to be just, you know, I had that trouble in the beginning, you know, when to start, because there was this on, that on, like that, and you know, you were saying, pretty much, just start, going, you just start, and then I was thinking, oh, wait another week, there's something else on. So, what do we do? You know, I'd like to just keep going. Half are going to the retreat, and one week break. Any others? What's that? Because then you're doing something the following week, so you miss 2 weeks. See, that's a good point. Who's doing something in 2 weeks' time that they won't be here? Just the one. That's all right. Okay. This was my plan, is that next week is actually not a double lesson. Next week we're not covering as much as what we covered today. We covered a lot today, one, because I didn't quite get to complete the last double lesson. There were so many questions, I didn't give as much as I wanted to, so I included that, and we've completely done the two lessons today. So, next week is only one lesson. If, you know, people don't miss it, I mean, if they don't attend, they're not missing as much as what they missed today. So if we look on page 16, you'll see that we're going back actually to things that some things we've covered, which is Srila Prabhupada's role in the role his Srimad Bhagavatam plays in his mission, and we look at the preface. 114, 1116, and 125. So we look at four things and we discuss. Actually, I'm going to get you to discuss it. So you'd have to do the work anyway. The next thing is that we identify some verses from 12 to 22 in the second chapter, which directly speak to you. So they're the verses on hearing, you know, Srinvatam Svakata Krishna, like that. You know, we should regularly hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, and gradually all the impurities in our heart become, you know, extinguished like that. Very beautiful verses, but again, it's something that you've got to do. It's not like I'm going to have a whole, you know, I won't really have much of this next week. Both of these things are things that you're reflecting on. It summarizes, you know, your realizations from this unit. You know, I can, you know, there may be some skits and role play and what have you, but it really is something that you, you know, if you read it through the week and reflected on those things, you're not really going to miss much. We're not covering a lot of other philosophical points. So. And it's only that one lesson. It's only, you know, from 2 to 3:30. The other part was just a filler. Not really a filler, but I was going to, you know, anything unresolved or undiscussed or questions that you want to bring up, I was just going to, you know, and go over things like that. So, and that will all be, you know, taped anyway. So, look. The class will be on the net. You can see him after class. He knows exactly where. Yes?
Would the next lesson, is it covering or touching upon chapter 4?
No, not at all. No.
So chapter 3?
Yeah, just tidying up a few little bits, and mostly it's your own realization. So, you know, my personal opinion is we just push on, do the lesson, you have a listen to it on the net, and in the meantime, you cover from, you know, all these notes. Does anyone want to take any notes from here? What I'll do is I'll leave that there for a couple of hours and I'll come and get it tonight, so don't walk off with it. All right? Do you want to? Yeah. If you want to, it's up to you. Do you want to do that? I'll leave it there for a couple of hours. I'll get it before I go home tonight. You can scan. Alright, so we're going to do the lesson next week, and then the week after, on the Saturday at 2 o'clock, you'll all walk in, you put your essays on the table. The 2 weeks from now, yeah, and you come in prepared to do a closed book test of 10 questions. No. 10 questions, and that will be from the list that we said before. In 2 weeks' time, we'll have the closed book test starting at 2 o'clock here, and there'll be 10 questions. But when you come into the room, you'll also put your essays on the table for me to mark, you know, over the next week or so. And that'll be the conclusion of that unit. If anyone has any difficulties with that, they can always, you know, see me, call me, send me an email. Is that?
Open book, we need to answer number 3 of the questions.
3? Where do you get 3?
There are 4.
There are 4. Why do you say 3? Someone else said that. I just wonder who's spreading that rumor. Did I say 3? Okay, let me just have a look in my... Yeah, let's have a look. Well, no, it... What's that? Yes, I'm just trying to work out why everyone... you're saying I said 3 in the beginning. Where? All of them. That's... Open book assessment. Keep your responses to the following to within 200 words. So, 3 paragraphs. 200, 250 is okay? There's 4 questions. It doesn't say choose 3 or... My understanding is that you do all of them. And if you look at page 7 in the student handbook where it says open book assessment, it says... approximately 10 open book questions assessing students' educational achievements for each unit will be given at the beginning of each unit. Students' answers to the open book questions must be submitted. So sometimes it's saying that there's 10 questions in the open book assessment. Here there's only 4. Well, let's have a look at some places it may be less. If you look at Unit 2, Open Book Assessment, see, you've got to keep in mind that at the end of the whole Bhakti by Bhava, you should have done at least 20,000 words within the open book questions. Yeah. And it just says answer them. It doesn't say pick some out of the five, does it? Some there's three, some there's four, some there's one, some there's five. So my understanding is you just answer them all. I would tell you that I've actually got my marking key. I'm just not sure whether I brought it in today. But if I've got it, I will tell you. I've left my marking key at home. But to tell you shortly, they're marked, you know, you get so many points. So let's have a look at one of the questions. Now, you're talking about the open book? All right. Let's take question three. How important is one's attitude outside of class in the study of Bhagavatam? Describe the appropriate attitude for study of Bhagavatam as described in 1.1.2. Okay. If you, you know, can quote the particular information from that verse, there will be some, you know, should be some marks for, you know, having the correct references. If you just repeat Prabhupada's words and don't describe as it asks you, you know, you're asking you to describe the appropriate attitude. So there must be some realization coming from you. You know, your personal contribution, relevant to you. If that's not there, then you'll lose marks for that. Naturally, there's, you know, for you know, if there happen to be, you know, analogies that are relevant to this and you do use them, then, you know, that's good. If you go off the subject and start describing your attitude to something else, you know, you see, so it's not that you know, there's some marks for the fact that yes, there's a reference, but we are looking for your personal realizations on it. So, you know, that, yes, that's how you're getting marked. So all of it is there. So it's not just an academic, you know, marking system. For each of these, there's about minimum three, about, you know, four, say 3 to 5 different categories I look at. As to, you know, you get a couple for this, four for that, two for that. Here, you know, the next one, describe the standard of the people in this age of Kali with reference to the Sanskrit in 1.1.10-11. Give examples from your own experience which reflects this description. So there it's actually specifically asking for some Sanskrit references. If that was left out and you just give your own personal experiences, you get some marks for that and lose some marks for, you know, or if you just give the Sanskrit references without any of your own personal experiences. So you know, it's not just an academic marking.
And if you go to one, you could select some of the following qualities, some, let's say. Not, in other words, not all.
Mm-hmm. A, for relishing Bhagavatam, of a representative of Vyas, of Srila Sukadeva Goswami, and discuss how you feel challenged in regard to developing these qualities. How do you intend to overcome these challenges? Yes, you can't list all of them. So, you know, there are some, and you'll get marks for being able to get good references that are relevant to this question, and you get marks for your realizations. And you know, there are a couple of other you know, if you need to evaluate something, then you get marks for your ability to evaluate something, you know. So sometimes there's your personal realizations, and if it is relevant and sincere, and if you ask to evaluate something and you can't distinguish or make the proper distinctions, then you lose marks. So it's not purely academic.
Mm.
Now select some of the following qualities.
You can correct one or two.
You can, yeah. It's my understanding is that you might take something from each, or you may take, you know, something that particularly stands out for you. It's the main thing here is that how you feel challenged in regard to developing these qualities. All right. So the ones that you're selecting are the ones that, but particularly present some challenge that you've noticed.
Right.
200 words for that whole. Yeah, 200 to 250. Yeah, it's not a lot. No, no, that it's not a lot. That's what, as it says, you know, three paragraphs is doing
a
lot.
You can't write a lot on each quality.
No, no. And for the closed book test, of course, as we described before. You know, for instance, we used the phrase last week, hitting the nail on the head. You see, say, Purva Svajaya question 2 on chapter 1, verses 4 to 23, on page 19, it says, spiritual well-being is automatically followed by what? Material well-being. That's the answer.
That's it.
That's it. You get full marks for that.
That's one mark.
That's a mark. Whatever marks are there, if you get, that's the answer. You don't have to, you know, there's no need to ramble on. And as we described, like, list points from the sages' analysis of the people in the age of Kali. You know, we went through them and we isolated that there were about seven. People have short lives. People are lazy. People are misguided. There's three. You know, people are unlucky. And always disturbed. Well, there's five there. Quarrelsome. Yeah, look. You know, there's five. Definitely from the Sanskrit. If you listed quarrelsome, you're not going to lose a mark. It's sort of the sum total of some of those qualities, but you're not going to lose. But just be careful of putting quarrelsome in and leaving one of those five out. That's where you will, you know, be penalised. But, you know, you don't have to write a paragraph on it. You just say people have short lives, they're lazy, and misguided, always disturbed. And, you know, this makes them quarrelsome. That's it. It's a sentence. That's the answer. What's that?
You have to write an essay or something?
No, that's just it doesn't say. It doesn't say to list the Sanskrit. So it just says, you know, list the points from the sages' analysis of people.